Change starts and stops with a WTF moment. The first is, what the fuck am I doing? We finally wake up to the reality that our life is not what we want it to be. The denial is done. We have to ask ourselves the hard questions. If we never have that moment, nothing changes. The next WTF is walking towards fear. If you aren't willing to find your growth edges and take steps in a new and likely scary direction, again, nothing changes. This podcast is a space to explore open and honest conversations around creating change in our personal worlds, which honestly has become my favorite adventure yet. Thanks for following along. All right, you guys know the drill. This is Christina from the future. I had a conversation with our guest today. Her name is Anastasia Allison. And before we dive into the episode, I want to paint a quick picture for you guys about who Anastasia is to me after this conversation. And holy shit, gotta tell you, this woman, Anastasia, is an absolute bulldozer of self-belief. Like, it's one thing to quit your job when you have this thing that everybody knows about, right? You're like, I'm going to start a pizza joint. I'm going to start a new donut shop. And everyone's like, great, I have a context for that, what that is. And Anastasia was like, I'm going to quit my job and start a company for pea cloths. Did you hear me? Pea cloths. And while I personally have used her product and love it from a wilderness perspective, the amount of belief that it takes for you to dive into something like that is unparalleled. So Anastasia really talks us through some of the obstacles that she's hit, how she's managed fear along the way. And the biggest insight that I had and learned from her is how to bust through the bullshit of, but I don't know how. So with that, no further ado, let's hop into this week's episode where you can understand and learn from Anastasia Allison. All right. I'm really excited to introduce this week's guest on the Walking Towards Fear podcast. Today, I have with me Anastasia Allison, who is the founder of Kula Cloth. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So as I was saying before we got going here, right, I don't have any particular, we need to get to this destination, but I know a little bit of your story from what you shared kind of on the internet, right? I know that you've had a near-death experience. I know that you have bootstrapped it to build Kula to what it is today. And some people who are listening may not even recognize the name, or others are like, oh my gosh, it's Alistair, like Anastasia Allison. Wow. So would you mind just kind of starting with a really high level of just who you are and what you're doing right now?
Yeah. So as you said, my name is Anastasia Allison. And I have to add in a little note that I'm always so flattered when people have not actually heard my name, but they know what a Kula cloth is. I had a friend tell me that he met somebody with a Kula on the trail a few months ago, and he said, oh, I'm friends with Anastasia. And the person was like, who? I was like, oh my gosh, that's such a compliment, right? That the product itself has gotten out there enough that it is slightly detaching from me, because in the beginning of creating a product, it is so intimately associated with the person whose idea it was, right? There almost is this like, okay, where does Anastasia end and Kula begin? And because the company itself has not yet taken on a life of its own. And so it's really exciting to kind of watch that happen. So a sort of high level overview, and I'll sort of give the, I guess, maybe slightly longer than elevator spiel, is that I'm a former park ranger, former railroad police officer, backpacking instructor turned full-time entrepreneur and the creator of a product called Kula Cloth. I had a near-death experience that was the catalyst for this product coming into existence, and more so than just the product, but me deciding to take a deep look within at all of the things that had been holding me back in my life and beginning that process of dismantling them, which I think is it looks different for each of us, but I think it is a common journey that all humans can relate to. We get to a certain point in our life and we don't realize all the stuff we've been carrying around with us that isn't real, but we've believed it for so long. And so Kula for me is the physical byproduct of that journey. And so I now run Kula Cloth full time. But in addition to Kula, I feel like I'm just a very curious student of life. And I love dancing and riding motorcycles and finding ways to just prioritize joy over stress. And I'm constantly inspired to run a business from a place of peace and ease, not stress and overwhelm. So that's sort of me in a nutshell.
I love you for sharing that. And when you said that, you know, your near-death experience was your catalyst, I've been doing a lot of thinking about this recently. I did not have a near-death experience, but in 2018, I had a pretty severe back injury that changed my life. And in 2019, I had surgery for that injury. And then in 2022, I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail. So to see what's kind of possible from that perspective, I was shoved pretty quickly into, there's two ways to grow, right? There's kind of chosen challenge, like, hey, my life feels kind of boring. I'm going to go try to start a business. Like, that's fun. Or there's crisis. Like, I have no other option. I must grow to get through this. So like, prior to your near-death experience, how much were you kind of in the world of personal development, self-growth, all that sort of stuff versus after it?
To be totally honest, almost none. I had dabbled a little bit in meditation, kind of off and on through college, and it sort of kept coming back up in various forms. As a railroad police officer, I was sort of forced into wanting to create a peer support group for other officers who were experiencing some trauma. And one of the things that I learned more about during the process of trying to put together this peer support group was mindfulness and meditation. And so I sort of was like heading back in that direction again, but like never fully got there. Like if you had used the words abundance, if you had used the word gratitude or appreciation, I would have not related to those words. I spent most of my time complaining. If there was a group of people who was complaining or being negative about things with our job or with the world in general, I was probably the one leading that group, if I'm being completely honest. And that negativity finds its way into your life. And the more that you focus on it, the more that you focus on all the stuff that you think is wrong with your life, the more you attract into your life. Of course, I did not know any of this at the time because I was doing it very unconsciously and unintentionally. And now I look back and see how all of that negative focus was very, very clearly leading me on this trajectory to this moment that had to happen. Because quite frankly, what I was going through was not bad enough that it was forcing me to make a change. I would sort of suffer in kind of a blasé way where it was bearable because that's what we hear. Oh, life's tough. Life isn't fair. This is just how it is. This is just going to suck. And it was sort of this grass is always greener on the other side thing. And I had this near-death experience and it was like, the part of me that was afraid to actually pursue the stuff that I had wanted to do my whole life was destroyed in that accident. I was not, but that part of me was destroyed. And I was sort of left in this heap of emotions that were seemingly erupting from somewhere that I didn't even know that I had them in me. I think I wept profusely off and on for weeks and weeks as I sort of like processed all of this and blamed myself for what had happened. And it was during that time that I started doing gratitude meditations, which was just something that at previously to that or previous to that incident, I don't think I would have ever considered doing a gratitude meditation, but I did this gratitude meditation that actually had me place my hand on my heart and feel grateful for my heartbeat, feel grateful for my lungs breathing. And I sort of realized like, wow, I've been going through life and have never actually acknowledged that. you know, just sort of taking it for granted every day. And when you have a near-death experience, you no longer take something like your heartbeat for granted. You no longer take your lungs breathing for granted. And I also realized during that incident that in that moment, I did not have any fear. It was a moment of absolute pure presence. There was no fear. There wasn't time for fear, right? It was just this weird moment of surrealness, and that was it. And there was no fear. And after it happened, I looked at all of the other areas of my life where I was consistently telling myself that I wasn't good enough to pretty much do anything, or that all these ideas that I had were going to fail. And I began to question the fear. I was like, wait a second, in the moment where I'm actually facing my own mortality, I wasn't afraid. And yet here I am thinking about some business idea and I'm terrified. Like, what is there really to be afraid of here? Like, are you manufacturing these fears in your mind? And I very quickly realized that I was, and I made a resolution to myself that I was going to change my life. And I started implementing little habits every day that were going to change my energy. I started doing a gratitude practice. I started calling my police car my rolling university, and I would listen to personal development books. I mean, I worked a 10 to 12 hour shift. 10 to 12 hours of my shift when I wasn't actually out doing, like, making a contact with somebody, was spent listening to different personal development books and learning about things that felt like they were opening my brain to new ideas that I had once been completely closed off to. I hired a coach. I started an online hiking group. I mean, if you look at the trajectory of my life, and I feel like exactly as you said, there are some people who sort of make the conscious decision to sort of change because maybe they're bored. But I feel like those of us who have had some sort of a crisis, it's like the crisis is really bad, but the bounce back from it can be so extreme. And if you look at my life, it's like this day happened. 2 weeks later, I had started an online hiking group and I was like off to the races. I was no longer settling for just going through life on autopilot. And I have never stopped learning since that day. In fact, I am always reading new books with new ideas and having deeper understandings of like my own consciousness and what does that even mean? And really fine tuning my own energy. And truly to this day, that's what my priority is like, what is my energy every single day? And what am I attracting into my life and into my business? And how can I be the best version of myself for not only me, but for the people who now work for me?
There is so much there. And what I love, the Rolling University. And I hope that somebody here is listening to this podcast in their car and have just deemed like, I'm in Rolling University round two. That's awesome. But to see that learning's a big part of it. And what I heard in your share is you went from the space of complaining and kind of flipped that 180 on its head to like be in full creation mode. Now you're just creating.
Yes. And when you flip that switch from focusing on what you don't want to focusing on what you do want, I think especially in the beginning, you start seeing instantaneous results. Like when you suddenly go from the negative complainer to the grateful, appreciative person who is just radiating love to all beings, like suddenly you notice, wait a second, I'm still at the same job. I'm still working with the same people, but like everything feels different. I'm no longer annoyed at people, right? Like we go through our lives thinking that we need to control all these external situations in order to be happy. And it's like playing whack-a-mole with 10,000 different moles that we can't possibly whack down. And when you finally realize like, oh, what I need to do is actually change from within me. And then as I change from within me, then the outer world shifts and changes to reflect this internal change. Then you take back all that power. You aren't just giving it away to other people and saying, oh, I'm miserable today because of XYZ. And it's really empowering to do that. And it has just been a really fun, interesting experience for me and continues to be. It's always growing. You know, there are challenges to running a business, and I'm definitely not, you know, floating on a cloud somewhere. I mean, we all have like our repeating patterns that happen over and over again in life that we're constantly learning to love more for what they show us.
Oh yeah. And that's why I am a coach, but I'm such an advocate of the process of coaching just because of what it can help you see. And to your point, when you're no longer focused on fixing the stuff out there, right? Then you look in, and just by changing the way that you think, and I say all the time, adventurous people like to adventure out there, right? But there's so much available when you adventure into your own mind, when you adventure and be like, what's in there? Like, we don't look at it all that often. Mm-hmm. And when you were talking about, again, it's like manufactured fear, you were also talking about, you had the idea for Kulo and you were out on the trail, right? That kind of dropped in for you. I know I've heard you talk about in other podcasts that in essence, you also not only had to manage your own fear, right? Of like, holy shit, am I going to go start a business right now? But also managing kind of the people around you and their fear, because they loved you enough to be like, maybe you should think about this. So how did you navigate that? Like watching other people be fearful for you?
That was really challenging for me because I grew up unconsciously realizing that I had developed a need for receiving affirmations completely outside of myself. And I think a lot of people probably can relate to that, where we seek the love and approval of maybe one parent over the other, or maybe another family member or a friend or a teacher, or somebody that we look up to. In my particular circumstance, I definitely sought for approval from my dad. He's a very, very traditional guy, somebody that I admire still to this day very much, but admired a lot as a kid. And he was also a very strict parent and had very, very regimented ideas of like what I should be doing or how the world worked, basically. And I did not realize it at the time, but a lot of his beliefs about how the world works were based on fears of things that he had experienced growing up. And I spent a lot of time throughout my life seeking that approval, right? Usually through my jobs that I was doing or working hard. And when I went to make the decision to leave my job, this brought up a lot of fears for my dad, who was extremely disappointed because he had a real belief around the idea of stability and security and safety. And it's easy to think that somebody's sort of projection of fear onto you is about you and that you're doing the wrong thing. And, oh, I shouldn't be doing this because my dad is telling me it's a dumb idea. But as people who are doing this personal development work, something like that isn't uncommon because that person is really dealing with their own fears. And they're usually coming at it from a place of love because they really care about you. But ultimately, I came to the realization that I knew myself better than anybody else did. And when people approach you, especially in the beginning of a business, they pepper you with all sorts of fears. You know, what are you going to do about this? What are you going to do about that? Like that you need a perfect plan from A to Z. And it's this bombardment with worst case scenarios constantly. And when you do that, you're closing yourself off instantly from the infinite ways in which things could go right. And this is one thing that I used to teach in my backpacking classes when I taught backpacking, is that so much teaching comes from a place of like worst case scenario, what could go wrong? And I've always tried to approach things for people. How could this go right? Like, what are all the ways that this could go really, really right for you? And when I finally did leave my job, I still remember the moment, the day, everything that I sent that email saying, like, this is my official 2 weeks notice. I'm leaving my job. I'm going to go pursue a career in the outdoor industry, which of course actually meant I have no clue what I'm going to do, but I'm going to wing it and hope it works out. And I, you know, at that moment, it was like that Indiana Jones scene when he's stepping off onto that bridge that he is having to trust is there. And it is a very, very scary moment. I'm not going to like minimize how terrified I was and say like, oh yeah, I was like super confident. I knew everything was going to work out. I had no clue if anything would work out. But if I could go back now and tell that person anything, it would just be like, oh my gosh, Anastasia, you have no idea how good this is going to be. Like, in your wildest dreams, you could not imagine all of the fun stuff that you're going to get to do over the next 5 years. And so my advice above all things is trust yourself. And if you feel that idea like welling up in your heart and it feels good to you, trust that over the well-meaningness of people who care about you, because ultimately it's your energy that is attracting things into your life, not theirs. And what's really funny is that as I started doing Kula and really like living into what I wanted to do in my own life, eventually, of course, when my dad actually saw some proof that things were going to be okay for me and that I wasn't going to end up like living in a box or something like that, he is on board with the Kula thing now. But it also kind of got to a point where it didn't really matter to me. And I could have a relationship with him that wasn't based on like needing that affirmation. You know, like I got to the point where I saw so much evidence of my own creation in the process that I no longer needed anybody to tell me, like, you should do this, you shouldn't do this. And I think it's also, maybe it's Brené Brown who gives some great advice that says, like, it's something to the effect of, and I'm paraphrasing, but if somebody's giving you advice that's not particularly uplifting, right, that it's very like worst case scenario focused, or you shouldn't do that, look at how they are living their life and ask yourself if this is somebody that you want to be taking advice from. And a lot of the people who are giving me advice, if I had asked like, okay, do I want to trade places with them? I would have said no. And that's not coming from a mean place. It's coming from like an honest place of, is this person living their life in a way that I want to, or am I going to trust myself that this creativity and love that I feel welling up within me, do I believe that that's going to go somewhere? And it does feel like walking into the unknown, but the more and more you trust it, the more you see evidence of it, and then you trust it more and more evidence shows up, and it gets momentum.
And I've said this so many times, because this is what the podcast is about, like walking towards fear. Running towards fear is irresponsible, but walking towards it, right, with these kind of slow, steady steps where you're trusting yourself is so powerful. And as a science nerd, I like to say that the antidote to fear is self-trust. And even like, again, the science breakdown there of an antidote, you still got bit by the rattlesnake, right?
Oh, yes.
It's just that the antidote comes in and helps. So it's not that the fear disappears. It's not going to go away. So even as a really successful business owner now, what's your relationship like with fear currently?
Well, it definitely has not gone away. I'm happy to report I'm a normal person. The fears tend to show up in different ways. For instance, thinking about my next big fabric order, or am I going to have enough products to handle REI's next order? Or is this fabric... In fact, I just got an email today saying that one of our printers had found a flaw with the fabric. And meanwhile, we have like this big order pending. And so, you know, fears come in like, okay, you might lose this client, or you might not have enough product to fulfill this order, or am I going to be able to get a building for Kula Cloth at some point, right? Like there's all these different things that sort of go on in your mind, or I'm not doing enough for my business. And what I do and what I believe the process of managing that fear is, it is just consistently coming back to yourself and the present moment over and over and over again. Because ultimately what's happening when we're focusing on these fears or spending time worrying, we are projecting out into an imaginary future that hasn't actually happened yet. Like, have I not fulfilled an order for REI? No, that has not happened. Could it happen? Maybe. But guess what? I'll handle it when that moment comes and just trust myself. And I look back on everything that I've handled to get up to this point. And there have been production bloopers. There have been, I mean, I was short on product packaging for 6 months once. I mean, just like silly stuff that seemed important at the time. It is now just this tiny little insignificant blip in the radar. And so I can look back at those and be like, you know what? I handled those things. And all of the times when I trusted myself along the way, it always led me to someplace better or led me to some deeper understanding of myself. And so when I feel fear or worry or doubt start to creep in, I have a very, very regular meditation practice. Above all things, I prioritize my morning routine, maintaining like a high level of energy. I dance a lot. I spend a lot of time doing things personally. Like I never want to be so in the energy of busyness and overwhelm that I attract more. And so I really see my job now as like noticing when I'm headed in that direction, recognizing this is not a helpful direction to continue traveling in, Anastasia, and then doing something to redirect that energy a little bit, because I know that if I can redirect that energy, then I can attract back into my life some peace and ease, and that things will get handled. And that is really the process for me, is just managing it on a regular basis. And once you get really good at it, you just sort of get used to it. And I also really believe that you can create whatever you believe is possible. And one of the things that I say to myself all the time, I'm constantly in the process of like creating who I am and what my reality is. I do not let any of that slip by me. It's all very, very intentional. And one of the things that I would say to myself all the time is that I am the most relaxed, peaceful entrepreneur that I know. I tell myself that all the time, because there's this idea in the entrepreneur world that you just have to be like stressed and burnt out all the time. And I remember when I was sort of like getting into that mode. And the more I got into the mode, the busier I got, and the more stressed I got, and the more I cried. And I was like, something has to give here, Anastasia. Like, this is not sustainable. You are burning yourself out. And so I started telling myself a different story, that I was at ease, that I had a lot of time off, that I did the least amount of work of anybody that I know and was the most successful. And it's really crazy how when you just start to talk and believe that it begins to take shape. That's not to say that I don't have stress, but I would say that like on a regular basis, I am a really happy, relaxed, low-key person who prioritizes like having fun over overwhelm. And it's a pretty cool way to run a business.
Yeah, I'd say so. And what you're alluding to is kind of that creative power of language, right? People assume that language is just descriptive, right? They're just describing the reality. And I'm like, no, your words are actually really creating that. So my clients hate me for it because I get really nitpicky with the words they choose. And sometimes they start to catch themselves, right? Where they're like, and I'm like, yeah, okay, yep, that was great. So when you were saying too, your process is basically notice, recognize, redirect. Mm-hmm. If I had to take a stab in the dark here, I would say the noticing is probably the hardest for most people. So what does your noticing process look like? If you could get more granular with that. And I know it's, a little abstract anyway, but I'll talk about
it. It is a little abstract. I think because I have been doing it for so long that when I recognize familiar feelings coming up and familiar behavior patterns, or when I start having conversations in my own head, and I really, really strongly believe that having a regular meditation practice is what trains the muscle of your brain to recognize this, because most people, they will get into an obsessive conversation in their head and they will replay it and replay it and replay it and have conversations and get more and more amped up. And by the time they go to work or are dealing with employees, like, their body and their brain thinks that that imaginary scenario has actually happened. And we're like elevating our stress hormones and basically living as if this imagined reality in our mind has actually happened. And so we're actually causing so much stress for ourselves. And I think that over time of practicing, noticing it over and over again, I've just gotten really good at noticing when I get very uncomfortable. And the awareness of it is the most challenging part by far, because most people just get into their heads and they're on a rabbit hole and they have no idea that they're on a rabbit hole. That's why you call it unconscious. And there are so many amazing books out there that talk about this, and they use all sorts of different terms, like making a U-turn or disrupting the pattern. One technique that I use, and maybe this sounds a little bit silly, but when I notice myself thinking obsessive thoughts about things, I will literally say out loud to myself, stop. I will literally say, stop. This is a program running in your brain. This is not you. And we are going to change our energy and our focus. And I will go dance or I'll do something else. I also write little poems that correspond to the different programs that tend to run in my brain. And if it sounds a little funny for me to say programs, I will just say that after a long time of looking at my own patterns, I know that I literally have, you know, maybe 4 or 5 consistent patterns that repeat over and over again. And I know exactly what they are. I know exactly what triggers them. And when they come up, I might get into them a little bit, and then I'll kind of stop myself and be like, oh, there I go again. I'm going into this pattern. And so I've written these little poems and I will repeat them to myself over and over again. They're really, really simple, easy to remember. And it is almost like I've been sort of snapped out of that cloud. But I think meditation is the practice of coming back to yourself, noticing when you're thinking. And so any practice that folks can get learning to train themselves to notice when they're thinking and seeing themselves more as the awareness of the thoughts rather than the thoughts. I think it's Tara Brach who says that a thought itself can be real, but it isn't necessarily true. And that's a huge distinction, is that, yeah, you could have a thought. I could have a thought that somebody is trying to screw me over or something like that. That's a real thought that's in my mind, but is it true? Or is that a story that I'm making up? And learning how to release those is honestly what sets you free.
And I go as far to say, as if you don't do that and you have something you're passionate about, anything, whether it's running a business or succeeding in a corporate space, you're not going to get there, right? In a similar vein, Byron Katie has a saying, besides your thinking, you're just fine, right? Mm-hmm. So really seeing it, it's this thought that's playing out. And when you keep talking about the perception of other people, and you'd even touched on before, right? The people who are trying to keep us safe, like, they're doing this thing out of love. And they're like, have you thought about all these awful scenarios? Have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? And then fundamentally going back to, are they happy in their life? It's like that lens for them is everywhere. There's so much self-protection. There is so much what if. There's so much fear. And I tell everybody, from a creative perspective, I hear all the time, like, oh, I'm just not creative. I'm like, what do you mean you're not creative? You are creating fear everywhere. Like, if you're creating fear and what ifs and worry and anxiety, like, you can use that power for good if you, like, tinker and tame it. So I want to like also move into that, knowing, you know, past versions of Anastasia have done a lot of work to get to where you are now. And with where you are now, like, what are you working on? What are you creating with this awareness and kind of understanding of notice, recognize, redirect to help more success in your life, your career?
So I'm always visualizing things. I'm a huge believer in visualization because visualization works in two ways, and it is such a powerful tool. But as you, just like what we were just talking about, if you're creating these imaginary scenarios in your head where you're angry and annoyed at people, you're doing a visualization and you are creating, but you're not creating something you want. You're creating the opposite of something you want. You're creating something you don't want. So why not take that ability and instead of wasting your time focusing on that one person who really annoys you and giving away all your creative power, literally wasting it on them, why don't you create something you really want? And so that's what I spend a lot of my time doing, is doing visualizations of the things that I want to create. So, and some of them I would say are vague, because a huge part of the creation process, I think, is also being open. Humans tend to be these like very linear beings where we look at a goal, right? Like, for instance, one of the things that I'm visualizing right now is the new Kula office. We're currently running a fulfillment center out of a 200 square foot tiny little fulfillment shop. And I live in an area where there's not a ton of real estate. And so finding a building is something that's high on my list, because we're slowly starting to run out of space. And I spend a lot of time visualizing exactly what this building looks like, but more importantly, what it feels like. What I don't focus on is how this building is going to come to be. Because the second you try to figure out how, you shut yourself off from all of the infinite ways in which this building could come into existence in your life. Similarly, if you are a person who maybe you want to visualize a new job, maybe you want to visualize creating a new life for yourself, whatever it is, have fun with that visualization, enjoy it, get into the details of what it looks like and how it feels. But when it comes down to the how, I leave that part out of it, because I don't want to say there's only one way for me to get from here to here, and that's this one way. I would much rather be open to the infinite ways in which something can happen. And so I try to go into my creative process being specific but open, and focusing on the feeling of what I want to create more than necessarily like the material things. So for instance, the Kula office, to me, it feels open and spacious and free. It feels like fun. I can see community people gathering there and like prepping for their hike. I can see this like bronze creepy cat statue outside, right? Like, I've envisioned all these fun details, but I really try to focus on the feeling of it. I allow myself to like fully experience what it feels like. And then what I do, instead of being like, well, why isn't it here now? And, you know, right? Because then instantly I'm focused on the lack of the building. What I do is I look at my life exactly as it is now without needing this building, right? The building is there somewhere. I just haven't seen it yet. And I look at my life now and I ask myself, okay, what can I do from exactly where I am right now to find and tap into the feeling of this building based on what I have determined the attributes of the feelings of that building is going to be? So things that I can do that make me feel free and fun are things like dancing. They're things like hiking. It's things like riding my motorcycle. It's things like being creative. Not anywhere in that list is sit down and stress out looking at ads on Zillow all day. You know, that's not a creative process. That's not to say that if I get inspired randomly to look at Zillow, that I wouldn't then look at it for some reason, you know, or that I wouldn't look at it in general, but like stressing out, trying really hard to make something happen is a different process for me, and one that tends to feel very forced, rather than one where I'm sort of like putting this vision out there and then kind of following the fun feeling things in a general direction that ultimately end up leading me to where I want to go, usually in a fun, very non-linear, unexpected, wild way. And so that's sort of a little bit of my process. I have a meditation process every morning where I will do visualizations. I speak a lot of my visualizations out loud all the time. And my husband gets really involved in that. And I try to live my life intentionally from a place of generosity and gratitude, and really just focus on like, what is my energy today? Am I matching the energy of the idea that I have for what I want to create? And I'm also asking myself, how does future Anastasia, right? Like me, who has this successful outdoor gear company, how does that Anastasia act? How does she feel? How does she look? How is she talking? And what can I do now to become that before it is maybe something that fully exists? And it is a really cool process. I am somebody who is stuck like on autopilot, you know, or on repeat for most of my life. And that's because I was just looking exactly where I was and complaining about how much I hated everything. And when you do that, it's not necessarily bad because most people don't know that they're doing it. I didn't know that I was doing it. I would never have like intentionally kept myself stuck in a miserable situation. Nobody would. But once you learn and know, like, oh my gosh, I've been pressing the repeat button this whole time, it's so cool because the second you realize that, you're like, wait, I can start pressing a new button and it can lead me somewhere really cool.
Choice is available. We love
choice
this.
Is available.
And that language that you use on nonlinear, I've been having a lot of conversations with people recently on career paths. And having nonlinear career paths, and to know that even if you choose a nonlinear career path, such as one of entrepreneurship, that whole world is filled with nonlinear everything, right?
Everything is nonlinear. Yeah. And like, you don't ever know what's coming next. And to me, that's so exciting. Like, I could have never written a business plan for Kula Cloth. I mean, the stuff that I'm doing now, which includes a creepy cat as our mascot, a dance experiment that has gone on for 811 days of dancing. We're having a 8-state park abundance tour. I mean, you know, we do these like wild things that are so fun and are constantly like evolving and leading to new things. And there's no way that I could have ever written that down on paper and said, oh, here's my perfect plan from A to Z. I think the success of Kula and why it's been so much fun is because I'm always open for like, okay, what's next?
And just to say, I don't have a business plan freaks most people out. And it's not that there's not strategy and there are things that have to be done and actions that have to be taken. This is not sitting on the couch meditating and like things are flying at you. It's like still an active participant in the creative process, but to just kind of be open to and essentially using like self-trust as your guide for your business plan.
Self-trust is 100% my business plan. And that freaks a lot of people out because we have been taught there is one way to do things. And if you aren't doing it this way, you're going to fail. And I have had to attempt to explain myself to people and really don't try too much anymore. But when I first started Kula, people were like, well, what's your business plan? What are you going to do when everybody buys a Kula and you don't have anybody else to sell to? And, you know, to that one, I think I might have said something like, well, I'll just buy an island because that's like 3.5 billion yeah. people. So I think I'll be pretty good if every person buys one. but, you know, the idea of not having a business plan or a plan or a plan for every what if scenario is scary to some people, because we have been taught to sort of live in this place of fear. And not only that, but our brains are just naturally sort of addicted to looking for those things to fear. Our brains are not naturally tuned to like the abundance of the universe, because that typically comes at us from this sort of like woo-woo perspective that most people will kind of say, okay, that's not going to work. But I have found that there is a balance that can be had, because I think you're also absolutely right. You need to do basics, obviously, to like get the business running in a way that does conform to some respect with how our society operates. And so things that I did in the beginning were like hiring a bookkeeper, having somebody to do my taxes. You know, I know personally that I am not a numbers person. Sitting down, looking at spreadsheets, literally just paralyzes my brain. I am the type of person who needs to be like creatively coming up with ideas and creating products and like doing funny videos. Like that's what I love to do. And so really knowing like, what do you love to do? Do that. And then find other people to help you with the other stuff, because that frees up your creative energy to do what you're good for. Now, there are some people out there. I have a friend who runs a business and he genuinely loves looking at his balance sheets and Excel spreadsheets. And if that's makes you feel better, then do that. But just know that like, if you are the type of person where something doesn't feel good to you, or you feel like your creativity is shutting down, they're doing a certain thing, that's a sign that like you can find somebody to help you out with that. And in doing so, you free up your energy to actually grow your business more, because you aren't sort of shutting off your brain cells doing something that is really frustrating to you.
And that's back to personal alignment. There's no one right way to do things. And honestly, that can be my frustration with business coaches when they're actually acting more of consultants of this is what you must do. That can feel really limiting to some people. It's like going back to self-trust as that business plan and seeing when people aren't for the like what we'll call like the woo-woo spiritual universal like manifesting, whatever you want to call it, they're still going back to choice and creating. What are you choosing to do? What are you choosing to create? And it's all the same language for different things.
It is.
But you had mentioned too, right, of you hire people to help you. One thing I see get in people's way all the time is, but I don't know how. So how have you navigated not knowing everything in business or life?
I do not know many things. And I started this business not knowing anything about textiles, about manufacturing, about starting a product. But I realized something very early on that somebody out there does know, and that I do know how to make phone calls and I know how to Google. And really, that's all it takes. And the first few sort of big breakthroughs that I had with Kula were through Google. I reached out to a friend at first who knew how to sew, and I sort of explained what I was trying to do. And she said, oh, you need a serger for that. And I didn't know what a serger was. It's a type of sewing machine. And so I had another friend who sewed, who lived nearby, and she happened to have an extra serger. So I drove to her house, picked it up. She showed me how to sew a straight line. And I kind of taught myself how to sew a prototype. And once I kind of got good at making the prototypes, I knew that I needed to make a strap for the Kula. And so I started Googling like straps, labels, how do I make a custom one, right? And you eventually like begin to find the language for things that you don't know what it is. I knew from the beginning that I was not going to personally be making these Kula claws. I wanted a factory to help me make them. I think one of my first Google searches ever was, how do I find a place that makes stuff for me? I mean, it was literally that general. And then as I kept investigating, I started getting more and more narrowed in on like, okay, what is this called? And suddenly on some Google search, it popped up like, oh, cut and sew facility. I also think that not knowing how the industry works is a huge advantage, because when I first started, I did not know, quote unquote, the rules about the textile industry or the factory manufacturing business. I had no preconceived notions about them or whether or not they would talk to me. And so what did I do? I just picked up the phone and called them and was like, hey, I'm Anastasia. I'm creating this new product, like, interested in your fabric. I'm interested in you making it for me. I was just so inspired by what I was doing and so excited that I think that that energy just must have like dove into the phone after these people. Like, they could feel it. Like, this girl is lit up about what she's doing. And even though she has no proof of success at all, for some reason, because of how excited she is, we're going to just like take a leap of faith with her. And unbeknownst to me, things happened in the start of Kula that traditionally I've been told now do not happen, like fabric manufacturers giving me insanely low minimums so that I could actually afford to buy the product, or factories saying that they would work with a company that had literally didn't really even exist and take on the manufacturing of my product. I was later told, maybe 2 years into Kula Cloth, I had a friend who had gone through some sort of an apparel school and told me that they had taught her at the school that fabric companies wouldn't talk to small companies and that factories would likely not take on your work. And I just remember when she told me that, I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, I feel so grateful that I didn't have that seed planted in my mind before I made those phone calls, because I didn't make those phone calls with the energy of, I hope they talk to me. I made those phone calls with the energy of, I'm creating this new product and I'm so excited to do this. And, or, you know, will you help me? And they all did. And so I think that not knowing has been a huge advantage. The other thing that I always recommend to people, and I call the not knowing sort of like getting stuck in the how, which is where we often like think we need to know all the answers. If you can, again, like visualize what your solution is, then you tune yourself to the frequency of the solution rather than the problem. And so if you can try not to think your way to an answer, but rather try to feel your way to an answer, you will have so much more success. So you can, maybe you have some sort of a conundrum or a problem or something you don't know the answer to. What is the feeling of the solution? The feeling of the solution might be clarity. It might be fun. It might be excitement. It might be one of those things. Well, what can you do now to find that feeling? And oftentimes, right, it's, I'm going to go hiking today and let my mind take a break from trying to figure this out. And then suddenly we are aligned in seemingly magical ways sometimes with the answers showing up. And those are the cool moments in business and in the creation process, when it's like the right person just magically shows up at the right time. And you're like, how did that happen? And it's when you're tuned to the solution that those types of things happen.
And that's it. It's the, I could not have predicted this had you paid me every last dollar on earth.
Yes, that has happened so many times to me. I mean, in just the most serendipitous, weird ways, I like look back. I think it's Steve Jobs who says you can never connect the dots forward. You can only connect the dots backward. And I look back at the infinite probability that like these perfect things lined up, and it just always blows me away how cool it is to see that happening and to sort of know that like, oh man, I met this person like 3 years ago and now it's like making sense and we're sort of linked up in these weird ways and things are just always, always unfolding. And I it never gets old.
And this is an idea I've been playing with recently, and I'm curious your perspective on it, and then we'll start kind of wrapping up. But this idea of possibility, right? You said that a lot, like tuning into frequency of possibility, of the solution that you're looking for, all of that. And I've noticed, and this is very much my experience of it, that sometimes possibility, it feels so big and so overwhelming that there's so many options that it can feel far away. But when I use that language of creating, like I'm creating this thing, I don't know how it's going to happen, but I'm creating it, it feels closer. It feels like I have more direct impact. So I'm curious if you've seen any differences between, again, being open to the possibilities versus, like you just said, I picked up the phone, I was like, hi, I'm creating this thing. You don't know me yet, but like cool is going to be huge.
Yeah. And I think what you are describing is that linear separation that is not open to the possibilities. And when we're thinking linear, so when we're thinking about creating a business or getting to a solution, our brain automatically calculates based on what we know, okay, this is going to take X amount of time for this to happen. It's going to be hard work for me to get here. And so you've already filled in the gaps that it's going to be difficult, and this is the process. So for instance, using my Kula office building example, if I were to think about like, okay, how could I get from where I am now to where I have a building, right? In my mind, I would sit there and be like, well, I've got to have, you know, this many $1 billion in sales. I have to, you know, find a place. I got to buy the land. I got to get the permits, right? Like that's I am literally like pushing that experience so far off into the future that it's uncomfortable to think about. Instead of, and it's a not, that's a not open like perspective of looking at it, saying there's one way for this to happen, and it's for me to sell so much stuff that eventually someday, hopefully I can afford it if I get lucky. Like that's stressful to think about. But if I can be open, then what happens is that separation disappears, because I am now in the process of creating this building, which exists within my heart. It exists within my mind. It is a piece of who I am. I trust that it's out there somewhere, as woo-woo as that sounds, like on some level. I trust that I am in the process of like revealing this experience to myself. And the second I'm open to the possibility that separation of time based on some linear way that I have said, this has to happen this way, that suddenly goes away. And so now I feel close to this building and I can like really feel it and enjoy it. And I feel like I've sort of got my hands in the clay creating an experience. And then I just get to get excited to see like, how could this happen? And suddenly my mind isn't like, oh, if I'm lucky, that'll be 10 years down the road. Suddenly my mind is like, man, that could happen tomorrow. Like, I mean, I will sometimes play a game of like coming up with these wild scenarios of like things that could happen that would make this building come true. And these are just, this is a fun exercise to do, but like go beyond like, oh, I need to save up and get a mortgage and blah, blah, blah. Go beyond the traditional stuff and say, come up with the most fun stories that you can possibly come up with. And you could say something like, you know, tomorrow I get an email that the Prince of Dubai has actually been secretly participating in my dance experiment for the past 8 months under a pseudonym. And he's so enthralled with the dance experiment that he buys the Kula office and I have it next week. It's actually been built while I've been waiting and dancing. I didn't even know about it. It's a surprise. There it is. It's real. And so, you know, like I just have fun coming up with like silly like possibilities like that, not to like make light of the creation process, but to like keep my mind open and say like, you know, Anastasia, like weirder things have happened. Weirder things have happened than that. And why not be open to the possibilities? Because that sounds really fun. And the more and more I'm open, the less separation there is. And then suddenly you open yourselves up to some sort of cool experience. And I don't know how that building is going to show up, but I just trust that in some way it will. And I'm excited to watch it happen.
Right? Like, people play with negative possibility all the time, and you're just playing with positive possibility.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just playing with positive possibility and having fun with it. You know, like, why not? It doesn't hurt me at all to do that. And instead of staying in a place of lack where I'm feeling bad about where I am, I can just feel grateful for where I am and kind of enjoy the process and have fun and be silly with it.
Absolutely. And I love handing out invitations to people because an invitation is not an obligation, right? They do not have to accept. But would you like to share about this dance challenge? That sounds like a fun energy to be in.
I would love to. So the dance experiment was my personal dance experiment, started on January 1st of 2021. And I just decided, you know what, I'm going to just see what happens if I dance every day and how that changes my energy. It was honestly never meant to go beyond like 30 days. And it changed my life so radically, so quickly that I never stopped. And today, I believe, is my 811th day of dancing consecutively. So I started 2021. On January 9th of 2022, I opened up the dance experiment to the Kula Cloth community and really anybody. You don't have to be a part of Kula. And I said, you know, I wonder if other people would want to dance every day. And it started out with me leading these Zoom dance sessions every morning. And more than a year later, we are still going. I have 5 people who help me lead sessions. We meet every single solitary morning at 6:30 a.m. Pacific time, and we all get together and have a dance party. There, we have days where there's anywhere from 50 to 100 people having a virtual dance party every single morning. We do a meditation and then a dance, and it has just been such a life-giving experience. I also dance on my own every day, but the dance experiment is, again, it's about being open to possibility. It was never like, I'm going to dance to get in shape or I'm going to dance to learn dance moves. It was, I'm going to dance and see what happens. And I definitely could not have guessed that, you know, 811 days later, I'd still be doing it.
What you just shared put a huge smile on my face. I'm in the process right now of launching a new Facebook group called The Art Lab because life is both an art and a science. I am both an artist, a creator, and I'm a scientist by training. And that stands for adventurous risk takers, life and business. And what you just said is I didn't do it with this purpose. I did it as an experiment to try to see what happens on the other side, to evaluate the data, right? Here's the thing, what's the outcome? So to see that it has created 811 days every day, how can people sign up for this or be part of it if they're like, oh, I want to know that?
If you go to the Kula Cloth website, which is just kulacloth.com, we have a drop-down menu that says events, and you can click on events, and it's called Dancing Without Disclaimers. And we launch kind of a new month every month, but you can join anytime. And it is a donation-based program. So there's no like set monthly fee. People can just donate whatever feels good to them. And then they get to dance with us for an entire month. It's a pretty amazing program.
That is stellar. So I would invite anybody who's listening to go check that out. And obviously check out Kula Cloth if you have not already, if you don't already have one. I have one and I love it. So thank you for your contribution. And as we're rolling into, again, invitations, I shared with you, I open a space for people to have an ask of my audience, of something you're trying to create, of something you want more awareness around. And before I ask, I want to ask, a little bit of a redundancy there, that's fine. Where are you thinking, or are you open to anywhere for your Kula office in case anybody has ideas?
Well, I'm glad you asked because that was going to be my ask. Beautiful. Was just sort of around the idea of the Kula office. We are currently headquartered in a tiny town called Granite Falls, Washington. And we would definitely like to stay in the Pacific Northwest area, in sort of the Everett, Granite Falls, Monroe area. Granite Falls is this tiny little town that's kind of the doorway to the Mountain Loop Highway. It's a perfect spot for Kula, and I sort of envision this building being a spot that hikers could come and like prep their gear beforehand and have an impromptu dance party with me. Or we'll have like a little Kula lab set up so people can come in and make their own Kulas with whatever design they want on it. But definitely in the Mountain Loop Highway area. And we're just hopefully going to build something or buy something that is over 200 square feet. So
I love it. Well, I've really asked my audience to engage and participate with all of this year. So maybe someone will reach out, or they'll reach out to me, and I will absolutely connect you guys. And I want to, again, thank you for your time and invite everybody else to probably listen to this episode 2 or 3 times. I feel like we talked about a lot of things. There's a lot of gold in there, and your experience, I think, parallels so many people that I see in the world, right? Including my own. I was not awake. I was not aware. I would listen to other people having these types of conversations and roll my eyes.
Oh, me too.
To then be on this side of it is so beautiful and say, this is possible. So a challenge that I'll toss out to you, it's currently March 22nd on our day of recording. I'm not sure when we'll go up yet, but I'm doing no moan March. I made a challenge for myself to 0 complaints in the month of March. Of course, my mind has them in there, but I'm not verbalizing any of them. And it's been so eye-opening. And you were talking about before, right, for people to recognize how much they're complaining. So if you don't think that you're a complainer, maybe that's true and that's excellent. But if you're interested in a challenge, because most of my audience loves a challenge, right? We lean into challenges. We don't run away from them. Challenge yourself even for a week. Catch all the complaints that you make, whether they're subtle, because sometimes it can be as simple as trying to state a fact, right? Like, oh, it's raining today. Is that a complaint or is that a fact? You tell me, right? So just to open that up and say, thank you for sharing your story from, you know, this current version of you, where you're headed, where you've been. It's so valuable, I think, to learn through other people. And I'm excited to use this as part of my real university. So thank you.
You're so welcome. Thanks for the great conversation.
Of course. Thank you for everybody for listening, and keep walking towards fear.